Morning's today's daf in Sota is Mem Vav. We are in the ninth parak of the Masechta. We find ourselves on Mem Hei Amud Aleph. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is L'Zichah Nishmas Libra Gabriela Bashmuel. We're discussing Egla Rufa. We started it yesterday, the ninth parak of the Masechta. The ninth parak of the Masechta deals mostly with the mitzvah of Egla Arufa. Egla Arufa, found at the end of Parsha Shoftim, details the procedure that's done if we find a corpse. We find a corpse lying in the city. So the mitzvah of the Torah is to go through a procedure of basically having the Zakenim come in from Yerushalayim, measuring which city is more proximate. After the determination of the proximate city, having the elders of that city come, bring an eagle, a calf that is within its first year of life, kill it by hatching it from the back of the neck, and then having something being said at the end by the Zakenim. The reason why this comes up in Masechta Sotos, we've detailed a number of times already, is because of the Mishnah going all the way back to Lamed Beis, where the Mishnah there mentions that certain things have to be said B'Lashon HaKodesh, this being one of them. We are now in the Gemara itself. We are two-thirds of the way down, the first wide line of the Amram and Memheim and Alav Nimsa Tamam Begala Tala Be'ilan. In order to go through the procedure of Egla Rufa, so the corpse has to be found in a very specific manner. It cannot be tucked away under something else, and it cannot be hanging from a tree. The Gemara goes on to comment, Lema Masvitzin, Rabbi Yehudi, Vila Rabbanan, it very well be that our Mishnah is only following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, not the Chacham and the Tanya. V'shachach Omer Basadeh. There is a mitzvah in the Torah of Shichacha, a very unusual mitzvah in the Torah, where while I'm harvesting my field, if I forgot about a sheaf, so then that now becomes a mitzvah incumbent upon me to leave it for the anim, to leave it for the poor. It's one of those unusual mitzvahs where the mitzvah only comes about because of shichacha, because I forgot. You can never actually intentionally get to the point of doing this mitzvah. The mitzvah has to come in a way of happenstance. In the meantime, however, the halacha goes like this when it comes to shichacha. V'shachachta omer basadeh. The Torah, when describing the mitzvah of shichacha, it says basadeh. Very similar to what we had regarding the finding of a corpse. Now we are doing a very funny comparison. We're comparing a corpse found on the ground and wheat that's left out in the field. Okay, so I understood the comparison is a little bit strange, but linguistically, we both have the word basadeh. So the Gemara goes on to darshan, pralat tamun divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if let's say it's not exposed, but it's being covered, so then it's not subject to the mitzvah of shichacha. The Chacham amomrim basadeh l'rabos es tamun. The Chachamim said, no, it's a ribui. It's coming to include even something which was covered. So what the Gemara now is suggesting is that that machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama regarding shichacha would also be reflective of a machlokus that they would have regarding Egla Rufa as well. The Gemara says, Amarav, Afilutem Rabbanan. The Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Because again, when you were talking about how to understand a pasuk, you must look at the context of the pasuk itself. The Torah, when describing the halal, the corpse that's being found in Parsha Shoftim, the Torah describes it as, you found the halal wherever it is to be found, pralatamun, which means that it can't be covered, meaning it has to be obvious and exposed. However, when it comes to shichacha, what does the Torah describe? The Torah describes the shichacha while you're harvesting. What is notable about the harvest? Harvest is exposed. So now when the Torah says the word over there, basadeh, it's coming, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda, to include, sorry, not Rabbi Yehuda, at least according to the Chachamim, it's coming to include something which is covered. Rabbi Yehuda, nami tepekle mishicha, demi dekatsir. So the Gemara says now, that Joshua was explaining the Shita of the Chachamim, that when it comes to the mitzvah of shichacha, even if it was covered. It's still subject to the mitzvah. So what is Rabbi Yehuda going to do with that drasha? Enechinami. So the Gemara says, you're right. In other words, the drasha in of itself is fine. The elavasadal amali mi baila the rabbi shechas kama. So as far as the pasuk is coming to is concerned, the pasuk is coming to tell me, what if I forgot the shechacha before harvesting? Meaning, I went to the field, I harvested, and I just forgot to harvest part of the field. Is that going to be subject to shechacha? So that's what we do with the pasuk. No, it's yes, that is going to be considered shechacha. V'rabbanan shechachas kama min alahu. So where is the chachamim going to derive that from? Nafkalu mechitik sur kitzirecha besadcha. And so he gets it from the word tiksur kitzircha. The double lashon. Rabbi Yehuda mi bai lelecha de Rabbi Abba amar Rabbi Lazar amar Rabbi Abba amar Rabbi Lazar prat l'shit safu omrim l'soch sadeh. What if you had sheaves that flowed into your field, into the field of your friend? Now the Chachamim also arrive at that conclusion, but from the word, the fact that Torah says sadecha, your field. Rav Yehuda besadecha lo mashmalei, and Rav Yehuda doesn't darshan sadeh sadecha. Okay, so a detailed discussion in the Gemara machlokes between Rav Yehuda and the Tanakama regarding the mitzvah of shechacha. Is it going to be inclusive of Tamun, or is it not going to be inclusive of Tamun? Machlok is between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. The Chachamim say that when it comes to the mitzvah shechacha, it comes to include Tamun, even if the sheaves were hiding underneath something else or being covered by something else, it still will be subject to the mitzvah shechacha. And the Gemara says, and even though that may be true, don't then apply it to our discussion over here, our discussion regarding the halal, ki matzeh halal. So it could be that our Mishnah is not exclusively the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim could agree with it as well. Everything is going to be developed based on the context of the pasuk. By Rav Yirmiya, Safu Omrim, Lasoch Sadeo Mao. So let's say that you had sheaves floating in your field, meaning your field got a little bit flooded, and now the sheaves are floating on the water. Avir Sada Kesadadami, Olav Kesadadami. So here now, the Gemara turns its attention to a detail regarding the mitzvah Shechacha. In order for it to qualify Shechacha, does it have to be on the land proper and you forgot about it? Or would it be okay if it's just within the airspace of your land as well? How could it be in the airspace? Floating on water. So let's say your field is a little bit flooded, and now the sheaves are on the water, so it's not resting on the ground. Is that going to be subject to the mitzvah shechacha? Amalei Rav Kanal Rav Papi Vamila, Rav Kanal Rav Zvid, Tipshalem the Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Lazadam, Pralashat Safaram, Lamasuch Sadeh Chaveram. Remember the halacha that we learned just a moment ago, that if sheaves, your sheaves go into someone else's property, so we said, so it's specifically because it went into someone else's property. But had it been in your own property, no. The Gemara says, okay, but wait a second. Meaning it floated into someone else's property. So that means it was floating in someone else's property. What if it was actually on the land of someone else's property? Meaning the diuk is that it would be okay. Of course it wouldn't be okay. It has to be on your property. So the halacha is that it's only shechacha when you forget it on your field. If it floats into someone else's field, even if it rests on your neighbor's field, it's not subject to shechacha. And the only reason why the Braisa constructed a scenario of it floating is because how else are the sheaves going to be moving from your property to your neighbor's property? The sheaves are not going to be walking, getting up and walking on their own. So the only way it's going to happen is if that there's a little bit of floodage, and the sheaves are now going to float over into the other person's property. That's the only reason why the Braisa constructed such a scenario. But the Gemara is basically saying, don't get caught up in the idea that, oh, you see, if it's floating, it's not considered resting. Tashma. The Gemara is going to try to ascertain. Again, the question is, for the mitzvah of shechacha, does it have to be resting on the land proper? Or if it's within the airspace of your land, is it considered shechacha? Let's say you had a sheave that you were machzik bo, meaning you picked it up. And what did you do? You picked it up to go into town, meaning you were planning on doing commerce with it. And you put one sheaf on top of another sheaf. And then you forgot it. So, sheaf that's below, it is it does qualify shechacha, but the one on the top does not. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon shnei mein shechacha, and the Gemara quotes in the name of Rabbi Shimon that both of them, both the top and the bottom, are shechacha. Hatachto mipnei shu'tamon, v'alyo mipnei shu'tzaf shu'tzaf. The bottom one because it's covered, and the top one because it is floating, meaning it's not on the land proper. Adkan lo pligi ela b'tachto. Now you noticed that in this debate where I have one pile of sheaves on top of another pile of sheaves, so we all are in agreement, both Tanaim are in agreement, that the top one is not subject to Shechacha. So the top one's not Shechacha. So again, the question is, airspace, is that, can that qualify Shechacha? Sounds like from the Brisa we just learned, the answer is no, can't be Shechacha. So the Gemara says, Shani Hasam, Kevin De'achzik Bay, Zacha Bay. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that case is different, because you'll notice in the beginning of the Brisa what was described, you picked it up in order to bring it into town. Since you picked it up in order to bring it into town, so you already made a kinyan on the item. You can't make a kinyan on an item and then have it become shechacha. It doesn't work that way. So the Gemara says, really? So if the Bryce's point wanted to be that once you pick it up, it's yours, and it no longer can become shechacha, so the Gemara says, allow me please to ask a simple question. Why didn't the Bryce just construct a scenario where I picked it up to bring it into town, I put it back down on the ground, and then I forgot it. Why did the Braisa give that example? So the Gemara says, you're right. The Braisa wanted to teach us a secondary halacha, meaning, of course, you're right. But the secondary halacha is that what if I don't put it on the ground, but what if I put it on top of another pile of sheaves and I forgot about the pile that's underneath? So now the Braisa can teach us that the, at least according to one opinion, not according to everyone, the pile underneath is also going to be exempt from shechacha because it's tamun. The Gemara says, all this is wonderful, but did you read the Braisa? The Braisa says, why is the top one not subject to shechacha? Because it's floating. The Braisa says it. So the Gemara says, "Ema mimeshuhu kitzaf." The Gemara says it's like it's floating, meaning the Braisa is not giving us the reason why it's pater. The Braisa is just simply saying that that's the condition that it's in. But the reason why it's pater is because I picked it up and I made a kinyan on it. Amar Abaye. Okay, so question that we asked was if we're delving a little bit of a tangent from Egla Rufa, but we're delving into the discussion of what qualifies as shechacha. Certainly, if I left it on the ground and forgot about it, it's subject to shechacha. What if I left it, but not on the ground, but somewhere suspended in air? Two examples of that, the Gemara just illustrated, would be one where it was resting on top of another sheaf, or two, let's say it was floating in water. So in these circumstances where it's not on the ground but it's suspended in air, is it going to be subject to shechacha? The Gemara makes an argument that it will not be subject to shechacha because it has to be on the ground itself, but the Gemara does not say it conclusively. Back to the Gemara Amar Abaye. We are four lines from the bottom of the Amar, last two words in the line, on Mem Hem and Aleph. Hireni ke Benazai b'shuket Tveria. I am like Benazai in the marketplace of Tveria. Right, Benazai, known for his prowess of Torah and clarity of thought. Loved Torah so much. In fact, didn't get married as a result of that. Discussed this already a number of times throughout Shas. But anyway, a student of Rabbi Akiva. According to Yushami, he was a Talmud Chaver. Anyway, Amar Le'ahum the Rabban La'Abaye. Abaye says, I feel like Benazai. Abaye, of course, comes later. He's an Amara, coming much later. But he says, I feel like Benazai. So, question now was posed to Abaye. Shnei Chalalim Zeh Agabi Zeh. We now turn back our attention to Egla Rufa, and now we're talking about two corpses, and two corpses are found, one on top of another. Me'echenu Modeid. From where do I do the measuring? So, min b'mino havei tamun, min b'mino havei lo havei. So the Gemara says, question number one. Like we said, in order for the halal to constitute a corpse that requires the procedure of the Egla Rufa, so it has to be on the ground itself. So here, the corpse on the top is not on the ground. It's suspended in air. Well, not really. In other words, it's lying on top of another corpse. So do we view that corpse that's underneath as min bimino, meaning they're both corpses. So do we say that it's as if it's lying on the ground or no? Or the Gemara says, and we can ask another question regarding the corpse that's lying underneath. The corpse that's lying underneath is covered, right? Yes, but no. Meaning, yes, it's covered, but what is it being covered by? Another corpse. So do we consider the min bimino, meaning it's the same type. So do we consider the corpse on the top to be covering the one on the bottom, considering that they're both corpses? Or maybe we'll say that the one on the top is not on the ground, suspended in air. We'll say the one on the bottom is covered because of the one on the top. And maybe we wouldn't do the egla rufa for either of the corpses. And as Rashi points out, the last Rashi on this amud points out, Rashi on the left column, remember there's no more tososim, Rashi points out that we can also, the Gemara could have just as well made the suggestion that both are going to be subject to the egla rufa, because the one on the top is considered that it's lying on the ground, and the body underneath does not serve as a chatzitza, and the one on the bottom, even though it's being covered by the one on the top, but it's being covered by min bimino, so that's not really considered covered. And so then maybe we could argue that you're going to measure from both. So really there are four possibilities: measure from neither, measure from both, measure from the top, or measure from the bottom. Amar le tim nisuha. So his answer, Abaye says, is from the following. So let's say, again, we're going to compare this to the case of the sheaves of wheat regarding the mitzvah of shechicha. So again, the brisa which we saw just a moment ago, I pick up a sheaf to take it into town, and I put it on its friend, meaning I'm putting a sheaf, I'm piling a sheaf one on top of another. So here's a perfect example of min bimino. And I forgot them. So here we have the machlokas, whether or not the bottom one is considered covered or not covered. The top one, we all agree, is not resting on the ground proper, and so basically the top one is going to be exempt from the mitzvah of shechicha. Now, where's the starting point for this discussion? So right now, we're of the opinion, we think that the starting point for the discussion is that that being covered is not a patur, it's not going to be an exemption. Being covered is going to be an exemption. So the Gemara says, and maybe now that exactly is the machlokas, where it's being covered, but by a like item, meaning one sheaf on top of another sheaf, and maybe that is exactly the machlokas, whether or not that's considered covered or not covered. So the Gemara says, lo. The Gemara says, no, that we're not going to give that explanation, but rather a different one. Ikar Rav Yehuda Sfir Lohu Dekulei Amad Min Bemino Havei Tamon. The Gemara says over here that the machlokas could be whether or not being covered serves as an exemption. The Rabbanan and the Shitas over here line up very nicely. The Chachamim follow the Chachamim, Rabbi Yishimon ben Yehuda ka Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Shimon, who's the son of Yehuda, follows like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, I don't know if Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda is actually the son of Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara does not make that point. But if it is, then the Shitas work out very nicely. So, Yahachim Ma'ir Yagabi Chaver Afilo Ba'afar Vitzor Nami. The Gemara says, really. So, if the real machlokus over here is being covered going to exempt you from the mitzvah of shechicha, so why are we giving such a fancy example of one sheaf on top of another sheaf? Just give me an example where it's covered. Rocks, pebbles, whatever, it's covered. And the Gemara says, you're right, but we're actually arriving at an additional point. Meaning, number one, covered is an exemption. And number two, even if it's covered by a like item, that's also going to be considered an exemption as well. Okay, so just to wrap it up, Gemara's discussion of being covered, is that going to exempt you from the mitzvah of shechicha? Is that going to not qualify for the Egla Arufa, so that is a Machlokas Tanayim. And then a further Machlokas, says the Gemara, is what if it's covered, but it's covered by like items? Like in the example of the Shechacha, you're piling a sheaf on top of another sheaf. Is the one underneath considered covered, being that it's a sheaf on top? In the case of Chalalim, it's unusual, but you have one corpse on top of another corpse. Is the one underneath going to be considered covered? So these are the issues the Gemara dealt with. Tanu Rabbanan. We are Memhe Amud Beis. Well, at the top, right, the top is a different issue. The top, the issue with the top is that it's not on the ground. So that becomes now a different issue, which goes back to another question the Gemara asked, whether or not it has to actually be on the ground proper. Okay. Tanu Rabban, the Gemara now quotes a Braisa. Chalavalo chanuk chalavalo mefarper ba'adama velo tamun begal. A number of specifications regarding when we're going to go through with the procedure of the Egla Arufa. Chalal means that it cannot be choked. It has to be someone who is killed with a sword. And I guess circumstantial evidence right now is going to be our guide in terms of determination of whether or not the person was killed by a sword. And not choked to death. Let's say you get there and he wasn't dead yet. Writhing on the ground and then dying in front of you, but you didn't find him post-mortem. And he has to be exposed on the ground and can't be covered. Nofa velo talui bi'ilan, has to have felled to the ground, not hanging from a tree. But sadeh velo tzaf al pnei amayim, has to be on the ground and not on water on top of the ground. Rabbi Lazar Amar Bekula Nimaya Chalal Orphan. Rabbi Lazar is of the opinion that in all these cases, as long as he was killed with a sword, so you would go through the procedure of Egla Rufa. Tanya Amar Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Hun Amar Lola Rabbi Lazar Yatam Odim Shima Yahya Chanuk Mutal Bashpa She'in Orphan. So let's say the person was choked, or the person was thrown into the garbage, in a garbage heap, that we don't do the Arifa. Ama Chalavalo Chanuk. So you see that Chalav Lo Chanuk, that the person was strangled. We're not going to go through the procedure of Egla Rufa. Hakanami ba'adama velo tamon. Velo tamon begal. No, fe velo talui be'ilan besada. I'm sorry, velo talui. Velo talui be'ilan. Besada velo tzaf agabe amayim. So basically they challenge Rabbi Lazar. You agree that being strangled does not result in the procedure of Egla Rufa. What about all the other drushas that we learned out from the Parsha? So, and the Gemara says, what would Rabbi Lazar say in his defense? Gemara says it in a very punctuated way. Rabbi Lazar says, I'm not going to go for all those other drushas. In terms of the requirement that the person had to have been killed with a sword, so the Torah says the word halal multiple occasions. So halal gives us a sense that it was killed with a sword, and that's a requirement in order to go through the procedure of Egla Rufa. All these other, you know, drushas that you have, the Torah only mentions them once, and Rabbi Lazar says, I just simply don't darshan them.
What's the difference how he's killed? He's still killed.
Yeah, I understand. You want to understand the rationale behind it. Good.
The
Gemara's assumption is halal means killed with a sword. That's the assumption. It has to be something which was unusual. Pray, right? Yimatse. Wow, what was that? But matsui. But if it's something which was commonplace, so it's not pleasant to think about. But certain places, in this country, for example, not going to name names. But in other words, murder is not unusual, and so. I understand this halakha is only in Eretz Yisrael, but if you find a corpse where murder is common, so the Gemara says, so there we won't go through the procedure of Egla Rufa. So by the border, by an ir sherubo shal of the kochavim, so there murder is common. It's matsui, not yimatse, and therefore we won't go through the procedure of Egla Rufa. Only ir sheim ba beizdin, the beinin zigneir veleka. If the city does not have a beizdin, so that is a prerequisite. That city will not be involved in the Egla Arufa procedure. Ain mode din ela leir pshita kevin the tana leir sheim ba beisin ane yadana de ain mode din ela leir sheish ba beisin. Then the Mishnah is a little superfluous because the Mishnah then describes. But you know, if the city has a beisin, so then you're going to measure. I think we knew that at that point in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what the chiddush is. Chiddush is, says the Gemara, Hakamash Malan, this is the first wide line on the Amud, Kidatanya. Minan Shim Shaim Nimsa Samachle Shaim Babazin, Shiminikhna saw modeli Shish Babazin, Tamalavala Khuzigna ear, Hahu, Hahi, Mikamakom. Let's say you have the following scenario. You find a corpse. It is proximate to a city, but the city that's proximate to it does not have a Babazin. At that point, I might have thought, okay, we're done. Meaning we're not going to go through the procedure of Agla Rufa. Yes, there's another city, but it's further away, even though that other city has the Canaan. But I might have thought the Havamina would have been, since the proximate city does not have a Beis Din, so we cancel the whole procedure. That's the Chiddush. No, we're going to bypass that city. We're going to go to a further away city that has the Canaan, as long as it's the closest city with the Canaan.
Does it matter how many judges are in the city? It doesn't
qualify what's meant by Beis Din. Meaning, I can ask the question, I don't know. Beis Din over here means 23, Beis Din over here means 3, unclear. It simply says it has to have a Beis Din. Nimtze mechuvan ben shtei ayaros. We are starting the Mishnah on Memhei. Actually, there are two Mishnahs. The first one, in the middle of the Amun, on Memhei and Beis. Let's say it's a tie. Okay, tie goes to the runner. Some of you got that. Rabbi Lazar says that if you have a tie where it measures out perfectly to two different cities, so both cities are going to be doing the procedure of Egla Rufa. Then Yerushalayim mevia Egla Rufa. Yerushalayim does not bring an Egla Rufa. Nimsa Rosha b'makom echad v'gufo b'makom acher. Let's say the corpse was decapitated, heads in one location, bodies in another location. So, molichan arosh etzal guf de Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Akiva omer aguf etzal ha rosh. So, machlokas tanayim, what is brought to what? Okay, stay tuned. The Gemara is going to explain that machlokas in just a moment. Me'ayin hayu modedin. Now, looking for a precise measurement from the city to the mace, what part of the body anatomically do we measure from? Rabbi Eliezer Omer Mitiburo. So Rabbi Eliezer says from the navel. Rabbi Akiva Omer Michotmo. Rabbi Akiva goes from the nose. Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov Omer Mimok Mishanase Chalal Mitzavaro. The place where he was slaughtered from the neck. Now, my Taima de Rebbe Eliezer. First discussion of the Gemara is Shitas Rebbe Eliezer. If you have a tie between two cities and they measure out in perfect manner to the distance to the corpse, both are going to be bringing an Egla Rufa. The Gemara says there's not one, but there are two factors taken into consideration in the Shita of Rebbe Eliezer. Number one, Kasavar F. Charlotte Samson. So first of all, it's a machlokas that we have throughout Shas. We're going to see this in Becharos. Becharos is like one of the prime places where we have this machlokas. There it's most unusual. There, talking about the birth of two calves coming out at the same time. Anyway, the Gemara in Becharos. But over here, the Gemara says that whether or not one can be precise in measurement. So it's a machlokas, whether F Charlotte Samson or E F Charlotte Samson. So first of all, Rabbi Lazar takes the position of F Charlotte Samson. It's possible to get a perfect precision, a perfect measurement. And ukrova aviafilu krovos. So that's number one. Number two, the second factor is the following. The Torah describes ir hakrova, the city which is closer. I would have said, perhaps you would have agreed as well, that it means the city, meaning only one city can be subject to the procedure of Egla Rufa. What Rabbi Eliezer darshins is that even though the Torah says krova, included in that is the word krovos. Rashi gives an example. I'll give an example. Take a look at Rashi. I'll give an example in English. Right? For example, sheep. Okay? One sheep, two sheep. Meaning you do have, we do find that sometimes the plural is identified even in the singular term. So what Rabbi Eliezer is arguing is that the same thing is true with Ira Krova. Ira Krova could be describing not just one, but two cities as well. So F Shalat Samsem and Ira Krova. No, it's not red. It's not red. This is Egla Rufa. This is it's an eagle. It's a young calf. We'll make a comparison later this morning regarding the Egla Rufa and the Paraduma. Okay, the confusion is understandable. And Yerushalayim mevi'a egla rufa. Yerushalayim does not bring an egla rufa. Damakra l'rishtava k'savi Yerushalayim lo nischalku l'shvatim. Another major debate that takes place throughout the Gemara, we've seen it already a couple of times in Shas, and that is whether or not Yerushalayim is subdivided by the shvatim. This is a machlokas. Either it is basically federal property, and it's in no state. I know I always use America as like a model to understand this. Okay, it's federal property. It's not no particular shevet owns it, or the Gemara has the other opinion is that no, a shevet owns Yerushalayim. Actually, if you remember, it's two shvatim owning Yerushalayim. It's Binyamin and it's Yehuda. If you accept that position, our Tana is of the opinion that it's not owned by a shevet, and so it's not subject to Egla Rufa. Egla Rufa can only be on a portion of Eretz Yisrael that's owned, that could be handed down Yerusha from generation to generation. Now the Gemara says this idea of does the head go to the body or the body goes to the head? That's not a discussion of measurement. It can't be, because when you get to the next part of the Mishnah, talks about where you're measuring from. So what is this discussion about head going to the body, body going to the head? So the Gemara says, so the Gemara concedes, you're right. So the mace mitzvah kana kamiflagi. The issue over here is whether or not a mace mitzvah acquires its space. Now, I'm sorry, I didn't present that well. A mace mitzvah does acquire its space. Rashi over here quotes the Gemara Baba Kama, Perek Meruba, where the Gemara there says that when they came into Eretz Yisrael, they made a number of takanos, one of them being that if a dead body is found and no one's taking responsibility for the dead body, where do you bury it? Where it's found. Mace mitzvah kone mekomo. It acquires its space. So the question over here is as follows. God forbid, not only do we find the corpse, but decapitated. So the head and the body are not in the same location. So which one now is going to be Kona? Is it going to be the head or is it going to be the body? The Gemara says, that's the machlokus in the Mishnah. So Rabbi Elazar says, it's the guf, the body. And Rabbi Akiva Omer, Haguf Eitzel HaRosh. And Rabbi Akiva says, nope, the body follows the head. I think, the Gemara doesn't make this point, but I think of Esav and that visual of Esav's head rolling into Mara Samach Pela. So, okay, I understand. It's not the same, but just that's what conjured up in my head. And then the Gemara has a very interesting machlokas, and that is basically it's a little bit of forensic evidence. When we find the head and the body disconnected, so where do you think the murder took place? Did the murder took place where the head is located or where the body is located? The Gemara says that's basically the machlokas. They're debating the forensics of the evidence that's provided. So, Marsav Agufa is beduchte nafel, Reisha denade venafel. It must be that the head rolled, but the murder took place where the body was. Marsav Reisha hechad nafel nafel, and Gufa hu deraita azo. And Rabbi Kiva says no. Where you find the head, that's where the murder took place, and the body, however you want to explain it from a biological forensic standpoint, the body moved to another location. Me'ayin hayu modedin. These next lines of Gemara are critical in terms of determination of life and death. And we happen to have, in our community, we happen to have an expert on this topic, Rabbi Dr. Shabtai. So, b'may kamiflagi, this Gemara over here is a critical Gemara for that discussion. We're discussing now, where do we measure from the body to the city? And in our Mishnah, we have three opinions. It is either navel, nostrils, or neck. The Gemara says, Mar Savar Ikar Chiyusa Ba'apei. So the Gemara says the question becomes, where is life? Where is the source of life? One opinion is that it comes from the nostril, meaning breathing. Mar Savar Ikar Chiyusa B'tuburei. The other says it comes from the navel, which I guess we could relate to the digestive tract. And Lema Kiani, and by the way, the Gemara doesn't even bother explaining the third opinion, which is the neck. But okay. Kiani Tanai, the Gemara says, maybe this machlokus is rooted in another machlokus, and that is very interesting. Kiani Tanai, Me'echen Avla Notzar. Right? How does a fetus develop inside, in utero? Where's the starting point of a fetus? Okay, it's unbelievable to see pictures of the fetus developing inside. Obviously, they did not have anything close to that kind of technology. How to explain this machlokus from a Torah standpoint, meaning... Okay, it's just interesting. So the Me'echon of Lanotza Mirashov Echenu Omer Mimei Imi Atan Gozi VeOmer Gazi Nizrech VaShlichi. By stringing Psukim together from Tehillim, from Yirmiyahu, so one can arrive at the conclusion that the beginning of formation of the embryo starts from the head down. Abashal Omer Mitiburo Mishal Sharshav Elach VeElach. Abashal is of the opinion that the formation of a fetus in utero, the embryo, I should say, in utero is really from the center point, and the extremities go and growing out in every direction. So the Gemara says that's the machlokus between the Tanayim, and the Gemara says maybe that will coordinate with the machlokus of where is life centered around, the nostrils, the head, or the navel. So the Gemara says, no, let's not try to put these two machlokasim together. They may not fit. In terms of the formation, the embryonic formation, so the Gemara says, could be that Abishal is of the opinion that it starts from the navel. But as relating to once formed, once born, once alive on this earth, so then he would be in full agreement that the source of life comes from respiration. And by the way, it's so interesting, the Gemara doesn't even bring it up over here, meaning when Hashem put life into Adam, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He blew into his nose, into his nostril. So, okay, it sounds like from the Gemara's conclusion that the chiyusa, the life, comes from respiration. Agreed. I'm not saying it definitively. Okay, good. Listen, any more discussion on this, I immediately yield. Dr. Shabtai is the Rabbi Shabtai, both. Okay. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Amir Mekom Shanasa, Chalam and Tzavar, Amai Tam, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Kedichsiv, Lasei Sosach, Al Tzavarei, Chalalai, Rishayim. Apostle Yecheskel speaking to the idea that the Chalal is connected to the Tzavar, and so when measuring, you measure from the neck, where the person was slaughtered. Okay. We start the Mishnah. We are on the bottom of Memhei Amud Beis. Next Mishnah on the Amud. Niftaru Ziknei Yerushalayim V'Halchu Lahem. Ziknei Yerushalayim did their job. Their job was to measure the body. Right? They descended all the way from Yerushalayim, came to the scene of the crime, measured the body to determine which city is more proximate. Their job is done. They leave now. Next, Bahakulahan, Zigne Osoyer Mivin Eglas Bakar. So now, the city which was identified as the more proximate city, so their elders are now going to come out with an eagle, with a calf. Eglas Bakar Asher Lo Mashchaba O. It has to be that it has not pulled on a yoke. Did no work. Veinamun Posel Ba. Now, in terms of blemishes are concerned, a blemish is not going to be a posel for the Egla Rufo. We bring it to a valley that is a son. What does that mean? A son? Strong. A son kamashmao kasher. The Mishnah says it. Afa pisha'ina a son kasher. Now, interesting. Doesn't have to be, says the Mishnah. It's preferable if the land would be strong, kasher, but it doesn't have to be. Very often, then you take a hatchet, an axe, and you hit it from the back of the neck. Now, from that point going forward, the area, the ground that this whole procedure was done on top of is now, for a lack of better term, a sacred ground. The ground cannot be worked anymore. You can't plant and you can't work the ground. But, says the Mishnah, if you... Understood. I don't know. If you want to be sorek, if you want to comb flax, meaning if you want to work on the land, that's fine. The problem is working the land itself. If you want to weed out rocks, that's also fine. You just can't work the land itself. The elders then washed their hands of water. B'makom arifa shel egla. The same place where the calf was axed. The Omrim. And they then make the following formula, which is the final psukim of the parsha. And then the Mishnah comments. And it's a famous comment by the Mishnah. Famous, I say, because Rashi brings it down in Chumash. You really think, they're saying, you know, we didn't kill him. You thought that the Zikanim were going to be the murderers? So, Ella Shalom Ba Ayadinu Pachonuhu. So, rather, what they're saying is, we have no responsibility whatsoever in that. If somebody walked through town, we didn't just simply allow him to go homeless. And we didn't see him, we didn't just leave him. Meaning that if we would have seen somebody walk through town, we would have taken care of him, food, shelter, we would have escorted him out of town. Fine. And then you have Kohanim coming in, and they make the following declaration. They say, Kapar Lamcha Yisrael Sher Padisa Hashem, Ve'al Titein Dam Naki Bekerav Amecha. Okay, they say this last formula. Lo yitzrichem lomar v'nechaper lahem adam. Now, the last words of v'nechaper lahem adam at the end of Pasuk Ches, so that was not said by the Kohanim, but rather, ala ruach ha-kodesh mevasra sam emasai shetaseh kacha hadam miskaper lahem. This is the part where the ruach ha-kodesh comes now and says, nechaper, meaning an atonement has been achieved, as a result of this, procedure, on the top of Minvav and Aleph, we are now starting with the Gemara. The Eimun Pasul BeEgla Mikav VeChomer. So then now we're going to start with a comparison, a very heavy comparison of the Gemara. Heavy meaning almost the entire Amud over here is going to be dedicated with a comparison between the Egla Rufa and the Parah Aduma, and the Gemara now is going to relate the two together. Maybe a blemish should disqualify the Egla Rufa because it does disqualify the Paraduma. Now, when it comes to the Paraduma, there's no age requirement. And yet, a blemish does disqualify it. Egla, sheshanim posels ba, eino din she mum posel ba. Now, the egla, it has to be a calf. It has to be within the first year of life. A calf, by definition, is bachnasa. That's an ego by its very definition. So, a calf by definition has to be bashna, has to be within 1 year. So if it has an age requirement, don't you think, can't you make the argument that it should also have a blemish requirement as well? Shani asam damakra she'in ba'mom. Ba'mom posel ve'in mom posel be'egla. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you have a drasha. By Parah Aduma, the Torah says, ba. It will be disqualified by a mom, meaning in a similar circumstance, i.e., Egla Rufa, the mum will not be posel. Elamiyata lo yeshar avodas posels ba alamar rav yudah marav. So the Gemara says, really? So then, if we have the word ba recorded by Parah Aduma, so then work should not posel the Egla Rufa. Because, but meanwhile, we know it does. Hiniach alaha odas shel sakim psula. If I put on a sack of sackcloth on top of a Parah Aduma, I've disqualified the Parah Aduma. That's considered that I worked the Parah Aduma. Uve Egla Ashitim Shoch. Now, when it comes to the Egla Rufa, putting it on top of the Egla Rufa is not enough of a disqualification. You have to put it on, and it has to be Moshech, and it has to drag it. It has to pull it. Now, in terms of why the definition of work is different for the Parah Aduma and the Egla Rufa, stay tuned. The Gemara later on will ask that question. But in the meantime, however, what's clear is that work disqualifies for both. Shani Parah De'afinan O Mi Egla May Egla. So the Gemara says, yeah, but in terms of work, so for that the Gemara says we have a Gzereshava. Egla Nami Taisi O Mi Parah. So the Gemara says, okay, so we have a Gzereshava. The Gemara says Gzereshava goes in both directions. Hamir Rechmana Ba. The Egla Nami Ksiv Ba. So the Gemara says we have the word bond in both locations as well. So the Gemara says the word ba that's found by the Egla Arufa is coming to teach me the following, that when it comes to the Egla Arufa, it will be disqualified by work. Other carbonos will not be disqualified by work. And here the Gemara says, if I had logic would dictate the following. Consider that the Egla Arufa, so a blemish does not disqualify the Egla Arufa, and work does. By a regular carbon, where a blemish disqualifies the regular carbon, don't you think working the animal should also disqualify it as well? Ekla Mifrach, the Gemara says, really, the Kal V'chomer is insufficient. So the Gemara says, yeah, but by the Egla Rufa, there's an age requirement. By regular carbonos, there's not necessarily an age requirement. So the Gemara says, okay, but there are some carbonos that have age requirements. Rashi points out the carbon Pesach, a carbon Chatas. Those have age requirements of being within its first year of life. So there, the Kal V'chomer would have been a Kal V'chomer. Again, to repeat, if work disqualifies the Egla Arufa and a blemish does not, if a blemish disqualifies, let's say, the carbon Pesach and the carbon Chatas, so don't you think working the animal would also disqualify it as well? And here it's a good Kal V'chomer because the Chatas and the carbon Pesach do have an age requirement, just like the Egla Arufa. So, right, that's it, it's right. That point is very fair, but just working within the construct of the Kal V'chomer. So the Gemara says, "Kashim depaslabu hushanim, v'kashim delo paslabu avoda." Me like depaslabu hushanim, kitzur kra lahanach kashim depaslabu hushanim. Okay. Now the Gemara says, as far as regular carbonists are concerned, the idea that work does not disqualify them, working the animal does not disqualify them. The Gemara says we're going to now have a second source. And stay tuned because the Gemara is going to even bring a third source. But right now we have a second source, and that is Parshas Emor. Averis o shavur, charutzo, yabeles o garavo, yalefes, lo sakrivo, eila la'ashem, eila tamakriv, aval tamakriv, kashim shenevda memavoda. If the animal has a physical blemish, so the animal is disqualified. But if the animal does not have a physical blemish, it just happens to have been worked, that's not a disqualification. It's the Gemara says, I need this source and I need the previous source as well. I might have thought that if I do permissible work, that's fine. But let's say I do work with the animal that's prohibited. Rashi gives two examples. One says Rashi, I work the animal on Shabbos. Two says Rashi, I work the animal with a unlike species, shor v'chamor. Right, so I might have thought that if I did avodas iser with the animal would be disqualified as a carbon. That's why I need two sources to tell me that no work is going to disqualify the animal as a carbon. Tzricha. Now here the Gemara is bringing now a third source that tells me that if an animal is worked, is not disqualified as a carbon. The pasuk says, "Miyad b'menechar lo sakrivu es." Es lechem elokechem mikol eile eile atamakriv avatamakriv kashin shenevdam anavoda. It's a drasha, a third drasha, that tells me that an animal that has been worked is still qualified as a carbon. It's the rechzakadachamin hanimilechad avabem kishen chulin avabem kishen kashin ema litzuru tzricha. So the Gemara says, here's what I might have thought. I might have thought that if I worked the animal before I was makdish the animal, that does not disqualify the animal as a carbon. But I might have thought that, let's say I was makdish the animal, now the animal has kedusha sagov, and then after I was makdish the animal, I worked the animal. Now that may in fact be an isser of me'ilah, but what we're discussing now is not the isser of me'ilah. We're discussing the disqualification of the animal. I might have thought that working the animal after it's a carbon disqualifies the animal. Kamash malan. That's why I need a third drasha to tell me that even after it was makdish the animal is not going to be subject to a disqualification. Okay. did a lot today. Wow. Wow. Just a very quick recap. We talked about the halach of tamun as it relates to the finding of the corpse on the ground. Compare that to the halach of tamun as it relates to the mitzvah of shichacha, number of unresolved issues regarding tamun by both. We then moved on to the next Mishnah. We talked about various ways in which finding the corpse does not qualify it as an egla. We won't go through the procedure of egla rufa. Okay, it has to be on the ground, slaughtered with a sword on its neck. Okay, in various other ways does not bring about the procedure of the egla rufa. We talked about the measuring. The sheet of Rabbi Eliezer, where you can have two cities that are both going to bring the egla rufa. Predicated on two issues, Efshel Etzamtzem and Krova can include two cities. And question in the Gemara of where do I measure from in the body, from the nose or from the navel or from the neck? Three opinions in the Mishnah. The Gemara tries to explain all three opinions, and then finally. Just one second. And finally, the Zakenim, after the measuring, they go back to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Lishkas HaGazis, and then the bringing in of the Ziknei Ha'ir to do the procedure of the Egla Rufa. And today we talked about part of the qualification of the Egla for the procedure of Egla Rufa, what disqualifies it, what does not disqualify it, and a comparison in the Gemara today between the Egla Rufa and the Parah Aduma. Kal v'chomer tried to be made between the two of them. And then three different drashas, all resulting in the halacha that not regarding the Egla Rufa, but regarding kachim in general, avoda does not disqualify kachim in general, not even after their nikdash.